Agenda paper 10 provides a draft of the final agenda decision, and this final draft reflects the conclusions reached by the Interpretations Committee at its May 2014 meeting. So the purpose of this session is to ask the committee whether it agrees with this drafting.
Comments? Any objections? Bonnie, excuse me.
Sorry, just on the proposed changes in the third from last paragraph. The first sentence where it talks about the listing is not received from the shareholders and is not received in exchange for the issue of the shares for less than fair value. I guess in reading the paper, the way I would have thought that sentence would have read is that there are two different fair values depending on the market in which those shares are issued. And so I think it would be helpful to clarify that it's not less than fair value, but it's a different value given the different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. Okay. Tony?
Perhaps unsurprisingly, I remain uncomfortable with this agenda decision. I think if I was to substitute the words disadvantaged groups in South African society for the word retail all the way through the agenda decision, I would be saying that all of the transactions in South Africa currently accounted for within IFRS 2 as a result of IFRIC 8 and the example in IFRS 2 would be kicked out or potentially kicked out, because I just cannot see the difference between this arrangement and the black economic empowerment arrangements in South Africa. And so I'm fully aware that I am in a minority that's very small on the committee, but I think this is going to increase diversity and it's going to cause people to say, hey, all these things you told us to put in when you issued IFRIC 8 are actually out. And if I had I guess two thoughts, both of them perhaps unpopular with everybody else. One is, instead of rejecting it for all the reasons in here, we simply reject it because it's a very narrow country-focused issue. That's a way that doesn't call into question the accounting that's applied elsewhere. Or secondly, we say the problem is 13A. IFRIC 8, which morphed into 13A, proposed GAAP for a specific issue in a specific country, and hey, that doesn't work. So the solution is actually to go back to 13A and say we need a more holistic approach to deciding what falls into the scope of IFRS 2. And I understand that that's probably not something there's any appetite for, but so long as 13A is the way it is, I think it's going to it's a recipe for inconsistency.
Since you've raised South Africa, I'm going to take Bruce out of order here.
And interestingly, not surprisingly, that was exactly our first starting point, as how is this different to the black economic empowerment deals. I guess the way we saw this very differently was, and this is how the whole with IFRIC 8 came around, was in terms of the black economic empowerment deals, the key thing there was you are receiving something. It was very difficult to point to exactly what it was, but I think the conclusions that were raised there were that we had something we were receiving. We just couldn't identify what it was. I guess the way we had kind of differentiated this one from that in our minds was that the difference here was that you weren't receiving anything else. It was just the nature of the markets, that there was two markets in which I was issuing the shares. Now, that does become difficult because I could analogize back again that in South Africa, certain of these what we call BEE shares can only be traded in certain markets, and therefore we could once again end up yet again with a dual market. But I will point out that was probably the most difficulty we had with it.
If I could just come back, I think where I struggle with that is that we say here that you don't receive the listing from the guys that buy the shares. Oh. You don't receive your BEE credentials from the shareholders. Oh. You receive them from the South African government. So there's a disconnect.
Well,
and in some circumstances, the market subsequently is between BEE shareholders. In this case, there's only one market from the day the shares start trading.
The only challenge I have on that is that you do receive it from the people, because remember that it has to be certain previously disadvantaged people that can trade. So they can trade amongst themselves in the shares, but it has to be a specific individual of a certain type that I get it from.
And then they're trading amongst themselves,
yes,
which is another market.
Yeah.
In this case, the retail and the institutional investors do not trade amongst themselves.
Yeah.
There's only one market once the IPO has happened. I say I think that the BE credentials, you don't get government contracts from the shareholders.
It's not even government anymore. Yeah.
No. So the thing, you don't get to operate a mine, whatever it is, you get your BE credentials as a result of the operation of law or whatever, not from the guys that actually buy the shares.
Okay.
And so while I've got no problem with it being out of the scope, I just think this is potentially going to cause a problem.
We've got a lot of other people who want to weigh in. Kumar, did you want to come in on this before we open it up to others?
Yeah, just quickly, I understand where Tony is coming from, but the other thing which I would also like to point out, that these arrangements are also just as common. And if I replace Black Empowerment with that, we will have to start looking for a service where there isn't one. Coming to the markets issue, Tony, I've seen this happen quite a few. You have retail and you have institutional, that's pre-IPO, which it works like two different markets, possibly. I'm still not convinced that it is, because there are barriers, but once the IPO happens, it becomes a different circumstance. But to argue then there is a service being there for which we need to do this, I think is what will also cause quite a bit of diversity and problems in practice. So I'm not convinced that a specific circumstance which was meant for Black Empowerment Scheme, which where there was a service, we should extend and generalize to every time there is an IPO between two markets. That's where the leap of faith comes for me personally. And I've seen these transactions quite a few times before.
Yeah, the committee has discussed that specific issue on several occasions and come to the conclusion, I think, that there's usually a service. I don't remember any other than this one when we've come to the conclusion that there's no service, but I could be corrected. Andrew?
Yeah, in paragraph 13A can be challenging to apply, but I think we've got to the right answer reflected in this agenda decision and support finalising it broadly in the way it's currently drafted. I do just have a few drafting matters which I've sent in advance. Mainly, I think we start off quite early in the wording talking about the unintentional difference and the intentional difference, but then the following paragraph seems to be more relevant only to an intentional difference. I assume we're not actually drawing a distinction between scenarios A and B in terms of the appropriate answer. Also, like Bonnie, I felt it was unhelpful right towards the end of the page to start talking about the shares being issued at less than fair value. I don't think we've actually reached that conclusion.
Yeah.
And I felt the reference to Treasury shares, I know that's just to get to the context of the IS 32 measurement principle for an issuance equity instruments, but this isn't actually a treasury share transaction. I think the principle that that's a no gain or loss transaction if you're in IS 32 stands alone without the reference to treasury shares.
Mm-hmm. Reinhard?
My comments are very similar to those of Andrew's, and I agree that it's not in the scope of IFRS 2. What I do think, though, and I think it's implicit what Andrew said, is that one paragraph near the end where it talks about the committee observed that the fact pattern, the listings not received from the shareholders, we go on then to say it's not received in exchange for or conditional on the issuance of shares for less than fair value. I think that seems to alter the facts, because the facts were that the to get a listing you had to issue shares at different prices to different people. And so perhaps along the lines of what Andrew was suggesting, deleting that last phrase about issuing the shares for less than fair value would be helpful. I do also, though, agree with Tony that, more broadly speaking, paragraph 13A has been causing issues in practice, and recognize that it was intended to deal with a very narrow fact pattern, but the issue is people are looking to that to enunciate some principles to apply, and it's very difficult to determine in actual fact patterns, when are you in the scope and when not. And so, having that subject to some review at some point, maybe as part of the IFRS 2 narrow scope amendment project, would I think be helpful?
Yeah, having spoken to Kumar's point, I share his concern. And I think that's the point that Reinhardt raised. You're constantly trying to figure out. But our tendency as a group, my sense is, we've found a service in several times that we've dealt with issues like this. Laurence?
Even if I have heavily been involved in the drafting of that rejection, I keep receiving feedback. The first one is on that paragraph that makes reference to 13A. And because it is, we are saying we are not in the scope of IFRS 2. Why are we talking about paragraph 13A? And the fact we talk about paragraph 13A, the unintended consequence is that it may throw doubt that if you are in the scope of IFRS 2, paragraph 13A may or may not apply. Whereas we want to be sure that if you are in the scope of IFRS 2, paragraph 13A applies, and you must apply it. And I come back to Tony's point to help him with those BE schemes. Maybe what we might be doing is in the last paragraph on page 7, where it talks about the BE schemes, in fact, it's just explained here in that paragraph that this case is different from the other one we have been looking at, because indeed in the BE scheme we could notice a difference between the fair value of the asset received versus the fair value of the asset issued, which is not our case. And finally, picking up, I think it was Reinhardt's point about at top of page 8, the interpretation committee observes the fact pattern and so on, the first sentence, I'm not sure it is adding anything, that one, so I would eliminate. And finally, to come to Andrew's point about the treasury shares, it is creating more confusion than anything. So perhaps the only thing we need to make, we have said it's an equity transaction, just follow IS1, IS1 equity transactions, so you account for in equity, and you don't need to make references to treasury shares. Sorry, Denise, do you have those additional comments at the later stage? But
so other than the beginning, the middle, and the end,
I think they're on, should be dropped.
John?
I share some of Tony's concerns that I have at previous meetings about the distinction between this and other fact patterns where we have considered that the difference between the fair value and the consideration does represent a service. I do think you need reference to paragraph 13A in this agenda decision, because I don't think it's clear. It wouldn't be certainly clear to the constituents about why this is not there is not a share-based payment transaction, so I think you have to explain why it is. Having said that, I do think that this amendment to the wording in this decision has gone a long way to help draw some daylight between the fact patterns that are in IFRS 2 and those that are that and this fact pattern which we're saying is not in IFRS 2. So I think I can see elements of facts drawn on here to explain why the accounting is not under paragraph 13A, whether they will be enough to provide or to prevent diversity in practice going forward is debatable. The second last paragraph on treasury shares, I don't really understand why that's there. I mean, it doesn't, like others, it doesn't have anything. And it seems to suggest that if you have an equity transaction, you never have an expense. Well, you clearly have an expense if you have a share-based payment transaction under IFRS 2. So I would get rid of the second, the penultimate paragraph of the decision.
Okay.
Sandy? Yeah, I understand what Tony's saying, but if I'm an investor in that market, I also know that this is going to occur, right? I know that that's the game in this market, and I know I'm going to adjust my price for the game, right? How much I'm willing to pay because somebody else is going to pay less. So whether it's stock, whether it's compensation in the income statement, right? I mean, my dilution is the same in equity. It's just that I'm going to see it at this one particular point in time. But I already know if I play in that market that exists. So I guess I'm not that concerned by, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I'm not that concerned by it because I've taken the decision to play in that market as well as I've taken the decision to play in this market, and I know the rules of the game, and I adjust my rules, what I'm willing to pay for the overall entity for that. So while I agree from an accounting perspective, I think economically I know the market that I'm in, and I know the rules. So I mean, and in the situation, would it not be disclosed someplace else that the difference in the price that was paid in the prospectus or something between these shareholders? So if I was really interested, I could calculate what that effect was to me, right?
Charlotte?
I broadly agree with it. I guess where I was coming to the same answer a different way, that I thought when I looked at paragraph 13A and applied it, there was no difference between the fair value of the equity instrument granted and the consideration, because the fair value for those particular markets was the consideration. So whether I'd go this way, so I'm not in 13, in IFRS 2, so I don't apply 13A, or when 13A doesn't apply, so there's no unidentified services, I was in the latter. Which makes more sense. But then it seems to tie into the different market discussions that appear later on. So.
Okay, I'm not certain exactly how to pose this, so let me thrash around a bit. We had a divided house last time as to whether or not you found yourself in IFRS 2 and had to find a service. Tony took that view. I think, John, you did too. Other than those, well, how many would conclude that you are in IFRS 2 and therefore there's an expense? Charlotte, you don't like that phrase.
Well, I don't think being in IFRS 2 and having to find an expense necessarily follow. If you don't think there's a difference between the fair value of the consideration and the shares you've issued, there is no expense. So.
But then why would it? Well, then. That's
because you're in a different market.
Chasing it around the other way. Okay. How many believe there's a debit and expense?
I actually never believed there was a debit and expense. My concern is entirely different, that I can't tell the difference between this and other fact patterns. I'm perfectly comfortable with the committee's conclusion. So I was never arguing to say there had to be an expense for these things.
Sure sounded like it.
I'm merely saying you can't tell the difference. And maybe if it will help everybody, I think this is perhaps as good as we're going to get, subject to the amendments that Laurence and a couple of others suggested. And if the committee's got to where it's got to, I think this is much better than it was before. And I think the best way to close it is to go ahead. But I just wanted to clarify, I was never saying there was an expense. I was always saying this just blurs the distinction between this and other transactions.
Okay. The one amendment to the wording that I have heard mentioned a couple of times is to remove the reference to treasury shares.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I see nods of heads, so let's get that out of there. With that deletion, how many would support it as it stands? With having deleted that paragraph, how many would then support going ahead with the decision as written? Okay, that does it. It's share-based compensation, but there's no debit.
Oh, no. Simply that it blurs the distinction, that's all.
Yeah,
100%. I think you're going to have this is
I know, I'm going to take this to our counter.
Okay. Yes, Bonnie.
Sorry, I agree with the elimination of the reference to the treasury shares. I still have an issue with the third from the bottom paragraph where it talks about less than fair value. So did you say that whole paragraph was coming out, or the first sentence at least of that paragraph was coming out? I still have an issue with that wording.
With the less than fair value, we will take care of that in the drafting bit.
Yeah.
Less than fair value bit.
So yeah. I just wanted to be clear.
We will do what you suggest.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to be clear that then I agree. I changed my vote.
fair point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, last technical issue that we have on for the day.